Blog Talk Radio.
Here we are. Massachusetts sends a naked model to the Senate. The Supremes let corporations invite politicians to come back for my alms again. The company that makes weapons for the military is ceasing the practice of burning its Bible verses into the metal. God bless America. Air France may be refunding some overweight passengers for the purchase of their second seat. Meanwhile, a praying teenager causes a flight to be delayed and diverted. The former future president of the United States, John Edwards, has admitted he's the father of his former mistress's child. He says he'll provide her with the love and support she deserves, which is more than he's doing for his wife. Conan the Negotiator will walk away from NBC with $30 million. The network's new slogan is, must flee TV. Cindy McCain now supports same-sex marriage. This may be the first example of same-sex marriage hurting a heterosexual relationship. In Minnesota, Norm Coleman won't be running for governor. After he lost to Jesse Ventura and Al Franken, he's concerned about name recognition being a problem with one of his possible opponents, Rocky the Flying Squirrel. Mr. and Mrs. America and all the ships at sea, welcome to Speaking of Everything with Jeff Bushman. That would be moi. All that, news of the weird, and a great guest, Ken Hess, who is a technology guru with a show here on Blog Talk Radio. He's going to talk to us about the latest developments in that area and, of course, his program, the Frugal Tech Show. But first, that cup of coffee feels great in your hands. The aroma goes to your brain as you breathe it in. The cabin's warming up because you had the foresight to get the fireplace going for the family. And now the smell of the wood is mixing with your coffee. It took time and work to get to the point where you could just get up and go to your cabin whenever you wanted to. But it also took being smart. You were smart enough, for example, to know that if you're in business and you have a website, you're really in business when you're also blogging. You went to jeffonblogging.blogspot.com and chose Blog Wizardry to write your blogs for you. It was inexpensive. It was well done. And it increased traffic to your website and your company. Even though that cabin's getting nice and toasty, you can hear the wind blowing through the trees and get a sense of the brisk outside air. What was that noise? You go to the window. A doe and her fawn. It's going to be a great day. Blog Wizardry. jeffonblogging.blogspot.com. And now, let me give you the phone number in case you'd like to join us to talk about any of the things we do talk about, or perhaps some of the things we don't. The number to call in is 347-994-3796. As a side note, before we get into anything else, I'm happy to let you know that you are among a growing group of people. Our audience apparently keeps increasing here on Blog Talk Radio, and now we're up to three. No, I'm kidding, but we do have an increasing audience here. I thank all of you who have listened and continue to listen. And as the old TV commercial says, please tell a friend if you would be kind enough to let people know about the show so they can join in. And if they care to call in along with you, that's fine too. If not, of course, just feel free to sit back and listen. The first couple of stories I wanted to talk to you about were not the first two stories we mentioned, but rather the airplane stories, because they're kind of interesting. The second one involves security and is kind of amusing. The first one involves overweight air travelers. Air France's policy has been to allow overweight passengers to buy a second seat at a 25% discount off of the normal price. This is both for their comfort and the comfort of other passengers. But they announced Wednesday that starting next month, they will refund the cost of the second coach seat if a heavier passenger has bought it for his or her own use, and if the economy cabin is not fully booked. In other words, if there are extra seats, they'll refund the extra payment. They do say, however, that if you're in that more corpulent group, and the flight is full and you haven't reserved an additional seat, you may not be able to board because, you know, if you're large enough that the that your bill does not allow you to sit comfortably in just a single seat. So that's the story with Air France. If I knew French, I would probably say something that right now, but I don't, so there you are. The other airplane story was of a praying teenager who caused a flight to be diverted because he was praying on board a plane. Now, if he had just inscribed Bible verses on munitions, he would have been okay. But no, here's what actually happened. He was trying to pray on a New York to Kentucky flight. If I were going to Kentucky, I might be praying too, but never mind. And he caused a scare when he pulled out a set of small boxes containing holy scrolls. And that caused the captain to divert the flight to Philadelphia because apparently some people were frightened. In Philadelphia, the plane was met by police, bomb-sniffing dogs, and federal agents. What the boxes were are items called in English phylacteries. No, not factories, phylacteries, yeah. And I guess it's Hebrew, they're called tefillin. And what they are is they're a couple of small boxes containing biblical passages, and then if one is using this, you put it on in such a way as to tie them to your arms and around your head with leather straps. It's a custom. Anyway, so one box is strapped to the arm, the other box is placed on the head, and the fellow at the FBI said the concern was understandable because this is not something that the average person is going to see very often. The 17-year-old young man, when he was on the plane, he was being questioned by crew members, and he tried to explain to them what it is, or what they were, and they felt, however, they didn't receive a sufficiently clear response, so they were afraid that they were explosives or something, and so they diverted the plane to Philadelphia. It landed without incident. And the entire plane was searched, and passengers were questioned, and he and his 16-year-old sister cooperated with the authorities, and everybody was fine. The grandmother of the young man said, "They had a morning flight. My grandson didn't have a chance to pray." So, of course, he went ahead and prayed on the plane, and that caused a problem. This is another example where religion can be a problem, I guess. that was just not a comfortable situation for apparently some of the passengers who had never seen this sort of thing. Of course, probably most of them had also, if they're going to Louisville, had also never seen a bagel, but that probably wouldn't have caused a diversion of the plane. In other stories, the reference to the Supremes refers to the justices of the Supreme Court. I'll get to that in just a second, but first I wanted to tell you that our guest will be joining us near the top of the hour and of course, if you're listening to this in the archived broadcast of the program, that would be in about 20 minutes from now by whatever clock you're using. But about the top of the hour, a little before the top of the hour, Ken Hess will be joining us. He'll be talking to us about Linux, his show, other items that are going on in technology. I'll be asking him some questions about some things that are in the news with regard to technology that will affect us all eventually. But getting back to the Supreme Court, they made a decision the portion of the McCain-Feingold Campaign Finance Reform Act, that was when the Senate and the House were still passing laws that had the word reform in them. But Feingold, a Democrat, and McCain, a Republican, together sponsored this legislation. And among many other provisions was a provision that said corporations and unions could not spend money on campaign ads on television that would favor or disfavor any particular candidate if that ad was to run within the last 30 days. Before the election. McCain-Feingold tried to prohibit that, in fact did prohibit that, and a corporation went ahead and created a film that was, antagonistic towards Hillary Clinton. And they did that with the primary purpose, they acknowledged, to make this a test case. And it turns out that was wise on their part, because what occurred is the Supreme Court said you could not ban those kinds of ads or that kind of spending, because to do so would be a restriction on the free speech of the corporations and the unions. The Supreme Court has off and on over the years seen spending as a species of speech. But in this case, it's not just the spending, it's the actual campaign ads. In other words, the law effectively said, I, the government, can restrict you, corporation, and you, union, from speaking and saying your view, stating your view in these commercials that related to the campaign. And the Supreme Court today said, no, you can't do that. It's unconstitutional. And, excuse me, although I would prefer, as a partisan or as someone who is interested in politics, to have those ads not run during the last 30 days, because they tend to be primarily used by corporations and primarily against Democrats, while I would prefer those not run, I have to say that I don't see where the Supreme Court had any choice. There's always a choice, but in terms of the law and the Constitution, a corporation, whether you believe they should be or not, is legally a person under the law. So when in the law, generally they talk about any person may or no person shall, whatever, that includes both those that we refer to as individuals as well as corporations. In that context, then, if it would be legal for an individual to do this, or for a political action committee, which was not restricted by the McCain-Feingold law from doing this, if it's legal for them, it's difficult to make it illegal for a corporation or a union. Now, I must tell you, this is really a distinction without a difference, because what was happening before is that these companies that wanted to run these ads were still doing it effectively, but what they were doing is they were going through political action committees, or individuals were making the contribution to the entity that was making the commercial. So this is really just a matter of changing the title of something more than anything else, because they were doing the same. This really, despite all of the concerns that were expressed today, really doesn't make much of a change from what was happening before. Money does talk. That said, Congress is now going to try to pass a law restricting this type of commercials and using language that they hope will pass the Supreme Court's scrutiny. That's how the process works. If the Supreme Court declares something unconstitutional, there's two different things that Congress can do. Either they can go through the process of initiating a constitutional amendment, which will then go out to the states for ratification, or they can pass a new law on the theoretical basis that with changed language and changed structure, this will pass constitutional muster when the Supreme Court next looks at it. That is something, not just in this case, but overall, is something of a fraud within the process that's followed for this reason. The real reason that Congress passes another law that does the same thing as a prior law is the hope that, first of all, the first hope is it won't get to the Supreme Court too quickly, and most of the time things like this don't. But the other factor is it becomes law and stays law until the next time the Supreme Court looks at it, as said. And the hope is that by the time the Supreme Court looks at it anew, the composition of the court will be different. The majority of the current Supreme Court is definitely conservative. On some issues, they're less conservative than others, and there are a couple of justices, whose votes may go either way in a given case. And that happened, in fact, today. Justice Kennedy wrote the decision, who is normally considered something of a swing voter. But that's what will happen with this. Again, in my view, it's mostly a distinction without a difference. We mentioned that it doesn't really require a lot more explanation, but there was a company that has for years had a contract with the military and has been making these gun sights and certain munitions that the military uses, both in the war in Iraq and elsewhere. And they've been burning into the metal or engraving into the metal biblical verses. It's hard to know whether they want those to be read by the people who are loading the munitions or by the people who get shot at, you know, but the fact is they've been doing that. It's been found. It's been objected to, and they're going to stop doing that. So that's the end of that. John Edwards, who was featured in the book Game Change because of his and his wife's public images being apparently contrary to reality, also just came out admitting that he was the father of the child to whom his mistress, former mistress, gave birth. One of the things that was interesting that came out in the book Game Change, which was about the 2008 campaign, and I heard this spoken of, I haven't actually read the book yet, was that John Edwards, after it came out that he'd had an affair, still wanted to continue running for president and thought he could still make it. And someone had to tell him that he was effectively dead, someone in his campaign. So that's basically what happened there. So, he is now fessing up, and he also said that he hopes that when his daughter understands that he has been denying his parentage, that she will understand and forgive him. Okay. Meantime, Cindy McCain has appeared on a website supporting same-sex marriage, as has her daughter, hers and Senator McCain's daughter, Megan. They are both supporting the site which supports same-sex marriage, which is fine. Senator McCain came out saying he respects the right of his family members to disagree, but he is, pardon me, he is against same-sex marriage. So that would seem to be a split in opinions in the household. What's interesting, however, Cindy McCain, it was reported during the campaign, allegedly was having a relationship, had an ongoing relationship with a Phoenix car dealer. I don't know who the car dealer is. His name was mentioned in the news story, but I don't recall. She is substantially younger than the senator, and I don't know about, I assume, but don't know if the story is true, that the car dealer is closer in age to Mrs. McCain. One would imagine the way car sales have been going that they may not still be on the same level, but that was a story that was going around during 2008, never been established absolutely, but that is the story that was going around. I wanted to also let you know, before we go on to our next story, that the book which I have written, which is called Mobile Millionaire, is on a new spot on the internet. It's mobilemillionaire, one word, .blogspot.com. There you can read an excerpt from the book, see what it's all about, and, may I dare mention it, buy it if you wish. The book talks about investing in mobile homes and making money from it, and details how to go about it, and has all the forms you need. And at this point in the economy, when things seem to be getting a little better, I will tell you that that being a landlord, although there are, like in any kind of situation when you're in business, there are some issues to deal with. The fact is that owning property which creates income is a very good place to be, especially as the economy comes out of the recession. So today, mobile homes in most areas are selling very inexpensively. If you want to find out more about that process and how, with very little money, you can become involved, take a look at the site. It's mobilemillionaire.blogspot.com. We mentioned Norm Coleman. Norm Coleman was the U.S. Senator from the state of Minnesota for 6 years, lost recently to Al Franken, who is now the Senator from Minnesota, and formerly on Air America Radio, which is apparently about to go out of business. That's another story for another time, but in essence, they're going dark at the end of this month. But as far as Coleman is concerned, he said it was too soon after his last campaign to run for office. He has commitments to his family and so on and so forth, so he won't be running. But he is probably the only man in America who has lost both to Jesse Ventura and Al Franken. Of course, Jesse Ventura also beat, many people will not remember this unless you're in Minnesota, Jesse Ventura also beat Hubert Humphrey III, Skip Humphrey, the son of the former senator and vice president, when Jesse Ventura ran for governor the first time. He actually beat a Humphrey as well as Coleman. News of the weird. I don't know if I mentioned the phone number recently, so let me do that as well. Phone number to call in if you'd like to talk any of the talk about any of the stories we've mentioned or any story in the news that we haven't. Of course, please feel free to do that. Likewise, if you would just prefer to listen, that's fine too. You may also want to mark down the number in case you have a technology question. Ken Hess will probably be able to answer that for you when he calls in, when he joins us, I should say. And the number to call in is 347-994-3796. Here is a very strange story. We get this from newsoftheweird.com, which is a great site. If you have some time, you want to spend both reading stories and watching some very strange video that's amusing, I think you'll have a good time at newsoftheweird.com. A National Guard member, Billy Miller, who's out of Illinois, is actually about to be court-martialed. The charge? Child pornography. Now, that's obviously a terrible crime. But what he's being charged with child pornography for, if you'll forgive the torture syntax, is a series of family snapshots that were sent to him by his mother of a young female relative in a swimsuit. Those same pictures appear on the family's website and Facebook page. This is like, you know, you have the picture on your desk of your kid's naked picture on the bearskin rug in front of the fireplace when the kid is, 6 months old, 7 months old, and this is child pornography. Unbelievable. There is such a thing as going too far in terms of enforcing law or, you know, trying to clean up everything. Child pornography is terrible, but this is ridiculous. I'm sorry. Excuse me. In economic news, there was a spike last week, and of course there was also a spike in the comic book, but never mind that. There was a spike this last week in first-time unemployment claims. The strange thing about that is that when the news media were reporting that, they generally said that it was unexpected or surprising. I don't know where they've been. But the reality of our situation is that unemployment is a lagging indicator, and as we've talked about before, will only improve when everything else does, or most other things do. And when we had reductions in unemployment, I mentioned, and other people have too, that this was not going to be permanent or on a straight trajectory. There will be ups and downs in unemployment until, as I said, we are really, really out of the recession, not just the start of it. The good news in that same area is that the leading economic indicators, it's actually called the index of leading economic indicators, takes a lot of factors into account, and they're not all uniform. For example, I believe that the stock market is one of those leading economic indicators. And although the stock market is, in fact, a leading indicator, I don't know if it's in the index. But if, for example, the stock market is in the index, it may go down while something else, for example, housing permits, if that's in the index, may go up. But overall, the index of leading economic indicators went up again for the ninth month in a row. That may not seem significant, but a series of LEI, as called among the geeks, leading economic indicators, going up on an ongoing basis is not only a good sign of what's to come, but it's really the kind of thing that also helps lead us out of recession. At this point, I believe he's there. I'd like to welcome to the show Ken Hess. Are you there, Ken?
I am. Thanks, Jeff.
Oh, good. I was going to say, for a moment, I was frightened that my smooth segue wasn't going to work. How are you?
I'm doing pretty well. Thank you.
Good, good. Ken is a, he may not like the title, but a technology guru, has a show here on Blog Talk Radio called the Frugal Tech Show. And he is also a columnist who writes on technology issues, and he also blogs. And before he leaves, he's going to tell us about all of the places you can read his writing and hear him and all of that kind of thing. But tell us first, if you will, Ken, about the show, Frugal Tech. What do you guys do on the Frugal Tech Show?
Okay, my co-host and I do a show every Friday at 6:30 p.m. Eastern called the Frugal Tech Show. And Jason Perlow is my co-host, and he is a ZDNet blogger. He's one of the most popular ZDNet bloggers, plus he's also one of the most controversial, I must say.
Okay, and, before you go further,
sure.
Because let me just say something to you, and I have a tendency to do this too in conversation. There's an assumption that everyone knows what you're talking about, so and not everyone does. First off, a blogger, most people know, writes blogs, people can read it on the internet, that's fine. Explain what ZDNet is.
Oh, ZDNet it's one of the Ziff Davis publications that's now completely online. It's ZDNet.com, but they have a lot of bloggers on, technology bloggers, Larry Dick, Jason Perlow, gosh, I can't even remember all the ones have, but they blog about technology topics, and Jason is one of those. He's a real guru in the technology sector, and ZDNet has brought their authors and writers and so forth online to do these blogs. And what they are, now some people do real blogging, but Jason and a few others do what I call just online articles.
Right.
So, yeah. But anyway, he's my co-host on the Frugal Tech Show, and we interview basically C-level executives on technology subjects. we profile their companies and services and so forth on the show.
That's great. And again, just to explain, when you were talking about real blogging versus online article, an online article I think people will understand, but real blogging, you're referring to actually writing a blog and getting comments and responding to the commenters and things like that. Is that correct?
Right, and he does that. I mean, he gets a lot of commentary. In fact, it's really kind of funny because he and I have discussed several times, I hate comments. I wish on all of my venues that they would actually turn off the comments. But some
right.
of the feedback is good, but a lot of it is just juvenile behavior. But, I mean, he gets
right.
hundreds of comments, and sometimes they get mm-hmm. really, really heated. So, you know,
right.
he enjoys that.
Okay. And you also blog. You blog on the subject of Linux, among other things, right?
Yes, I do. I have a blog on DannyWeb. DannyWeb.com, and that's a developer site, and the owner, Danny Horowitz, decided about 2 years ago that she wanted some regular writers to come in and write on technology news and hot topics and things like that to help boost membership and to get interest in the site. And at the time, when I started in April of 2008, she had just about 300,000, maybe just under 300,000 members. Now she's well over 600,000. Yeah.
Oh, but even 300,000 is a bunch, yeah.
Yeah, and now we're getting – oh, I'm sorry. We're getting almost –
no, go ahead, please.
We're getting almost a million hits a month now on that site.
And before you go on, I want to make sure people know in case – they'd like to go visit that. It's DannyWeb.com. Anyway,
right.
go ahead with what you were saying. So there's a million. And what I was going to ask you is, now, the articles that are on that site, those are essentially about Linux, correct?
Right. Mine are, because I'm the Linux blogger on there. In fact, I call it Ken Hess's Linux blog because I couldn't think of a better name for it.
That is a clever title.
Yeah. Well, they it's like location, 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 tell people
right.
what your
mm-hmm.
company is about. Mm-hmm. So I tell them what my blog is about. It's Ken Hess's Linux blog. And that's, I guess there's no plainer way of saying that. But I do Linux and open source, and I will occasionally blog on Windows or mobile devices. It just depends on what's happening in the news and how it strikes me at the time and how it relates to Linux. But basically, it is a Linux blog, and I keep it blogish. In other words, a blog, as opposed to an art, a blog is more personal. You can use personal experience, like, the first person, you say, I did this.
Right.
And it's more or less a first person enactment of something. But and it's a lot of opinion, which I really love because I'm very opinionated.
Sure.
And, articles, on the other hand, are always second person. It's always about the reader, you. And, they're a little more formal, but a blog
right.
is more personal. So there's a big difference if somebody really wanted to know. But, yeah, I blog on Linux and open source topics on Danny Web, and that's my main gig there.
Mm-hmm. And although many people know or think they know what Linux is, I'd like you to take a second and explain what it is as distinguished from other operating systems. And also, if you will, an idea for folks who may be interested, why Linux is, in your view, better than the other available operating systems.
Oh, sure.
I know that's
a big
order, but go ahead.
Oh, no problem. Don't worry. I can do that.
I know.
Linux is really an operating system kernel, and Windows has a kernel too. But
what's a kernel?
In fact, a kernel is the central core of an operating system. It's really the heartbeat. It's really the heart of an operating system. I don't really know how to explain it other than it's the core that the operating system is built around. But when people say Linux, just like when I say Linux, I refer to the operating system as a whole. All the programs that are on it, the window managers, the desktop environment, the applications that you click on. I refer to Linux as the operating system. It's formally the kernel, but I never refer to it that way. I always consider it to be the whole operating system.
Okay.
What Linux is...
Go ahead and explain.
The guy that came up with Linux, his name is Linus Torvalds, or as some people say, Linus Torvalds. And he's a guy from Finland who came up with the idea about 19 years ago to develop a new operating system. And it's actually based on another operating system called Minix. But anyway, that's a whole other story. But Linux was built by Linus Torvalds, and it was a graduate student project when he was in college. And it's blossomed into this crazy worldwide religion, basically. There's Macintosh, that's an operating system. Windows is an operating system. Linux is an operating system, so it's another choice that you have for running your computer, basically. And so what makes it different? I don't know that it's necessarily better, although a lot of people would argue that point with me. I think it's different because it's free. I mean, it's free of charge, and it's free in Richard Stallman, who's a famous he started GNU.org and so on.
He's a technology thinker and an essayist who writes on technology issues and speaks on. You'll frequently see him on things like PBS and hear him on NPR and so forth, right?
Right. In fact, I've interviewed him a couple of times, and he's a very interesting guy. But anyway, free as in freedom means that not only can you download this operating system and keep it with no charge. You can alter this operating system, which you can't do with Windows or the Macintosh OS, but you can actually, if you're a programmer, you can alter that operating system and do anything you want to with it. And then you can actually give that code away to other people and let them use it and improve upon it. And that's really what the whole open source and free software thing is about, that everybody's buzzing about and talking about. Free software is more of an ideal than an actual thing, I guess. It's free right. as in freedom. Some people say mm-hmm. free as in free beer, although I personally have never had any of this free beer that people keep talking about.
But, where is that stuff?
Yeah, I wish I had some right now.
No, sorry.
not a perk of your show, by the way, is the free beer. So.
Yes, I understand. Yeah, well, I have the free beer right here, but unfortunately you can't access it.
Oh, bummer.
Well, anyway, go ahead. What you're saying then.
That's what the whole thing is with Linux. Linux really became, I would say, mainstream in the late 90s. I've been messing with it since about 95, 96, when I started the local mm-hmm. Linux users group here in Tulsa, Oklahoma, where I happen mm-hmm. to live.
Mm-hmm.
And it's still going strong, still growing. People show up every month. I'm not involved in it anymore because I just don't have the time. But I started that users group, and the funny thing was is because I was in Tulsa, which we're right in the middle of the country, folks. So things happen here last.
Right.
You know, things start
not
on the
coast. Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. And they move in. So Linux didn't really catch on all that fast here, but when I started the Linux users group, we had about 6 people, and I was so frustrated because it was so hard to get a users group started here because, A, no one had heard of Linux, no one cared about Linux. I actually, where I worked at the time, which was WorldCom, I actually got in trouble for having a Linux machine.
Wow.
And that's, I got reprimanded for having a Linux machine a couple of times, and I told them, I said, look, this is the way of the future, man. This was in 1996. I said, you can tell me to get rid of it, and I'll get rid of it, but someday you're going to be running Linux in this data center.
Mm-hmm.
And they, you know, they, of course, WorldCom is gone, but they've morphed into, you know, they were MCI WorldCom, and then they were... another Verizon business, but they run a lot of Linux now, so I was right.
Oh, I'm sure they do. What I was going to say is that they probably said something about, look, we're a successful company. You don't argue with a successful company like WorldCom. The other thing I was going to ask you about, Ken, is this. You had mentioned, and I want you to, I want to, make clear for folks, when you said Linux is free, you can download the operating system and use it. Well, for most people, when they go buy a computer, you know what I'm going to say already, the feeling is that Windows is free, or the Mac operating system, if that's what they buy, is free, because I'm not paying any extra for it, right?
Well, yeah, that is true. In fact, if you order a computer from a place like Dell, or HP, or Acer. In fact, I just bought a new Acer laptop for Christmas, and it came with Windows 7 on it. And the laptop was $500. I don't think it would have been any cheaper if I'd said, hey, don't put Windows on it. I want to put Linux on it. It wouldn't have been any cheaper. So essentially, it is free. I mean, if you go and buy, if you're running Vista and you want Windows 7, you have to pay $200 or $300 for that upgrade. But if you buy a new computer, I guess that's the impetus to buy a new computer, is you get basically a free operating system. But you're right, it feels free, and you don't really get a discount if you don't get an operating system. Now, that said, if you buy a pre-built system, you don't get a discount. Yeah. But if you go on Dell.com or one of these other companies, HP, I think, and some of the others, you actually build your machine, and they will discount it.
Right.
They'll say,
and the other thing I was going to – yeah. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say,
if
you select Linux, it says $0, and then if you put Windows on it, it'll say $128 or $178 or however much the operating system is.
Mm-hmm.
And it's different if you want the home version or the professional version or the ultimate version,
right,
and so on.
Yeah. Well, one of the things is that when you're buying a pre-built system, when you go into an Apple store, if that's the operating system, or anyone of a thousand retail outlets for your next netbook or your laptop, the fact is that you actually are paying for that operating system. It's just built into the price. But you're right, you can't get a discount if you say take Windows off, because they've already paid the license fee.
Right. Yeah, and
okay.
You know, like Macintosh, I don't know if a lot of people know about Macintosh. The Mac operating system versions 9 back were
mm-hmm.
a proprietary Macintosh operating system, and it was very different.
Right.
With Mac OS 10, that is now a hybrid of what's called FreeBSD, which is a Linux-like operating system,
mm-hmm.
and it also has some another of Steve Jobs's, or however he says his name, Steve Jobs' operating system is called Next. So it's really
mm-hmm.
a blend of Next and FreeBSD, and
mm-hmm.
it's an operating system. And in fact, now Macintoshes have a terminal window. You know, you can open the box and type in
right.
commands like a DOS window and so on that you couldn't do before. And, you know, it's interesting. I like the new Mac OS. In fact, I really wish that I could find some benefactor out there to give me a new Mac AirBook. But I haven't found that.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know, any minute now, probably. It's over with the free beer.
Oh, yeah, true.
Yeah, yeah. And the you mentioned that Linux is free, and that is true. You can download it and use it. But you can also occasionally buy, in fact, I did this. I bought Ubuntu at a bookstore. It was on a CD, and it made it, for someone who is not extremely technically oriented, makes it very easy to install it, load it, and use it. So you can do it that way as well, right?
Sure. In fact, a good friend of mine, William Von Hagen, wrote a book called The Ubuntu Bible, and it comes with a CD or DVD in the back of it with Ubuntu on it. And, you know, you've got basically an 800-page book that tells you everything you'd want to know about this operating system, and you get the operating system with it for, I don't know, $40 or however much the book is.
Right.
But, it's excellent. I mean, I used to do that before I was really into the whole technology writing thing. I used to go and buy those books at the bookstore with the CDs in the back and use them.
Sure.
In fact, I've got, you know, I think just recently have I thrown away some of my old books, and it was a tearful departure, trust me.
Sure. Yeah. And the other thing is you were mentioning, and I want to make sure people are aware of it, and then we can move on to a different subject, of course, is the fact that when you get an Ubuntu, not Ubuntu, strictly, when you get a Linux operating system, all the things you're used to on your Windows or Apple-based machine, you can get free. Yeah, there's OpenOffice, for example, which is only one of several types of Windows Office lookalikes to some extent, in the sense that you get the full system. You get the word processing, the spreadsheet, so on and so forth. And unlike with your, I bought a laptop a while back, and although it came with a Windows operating system, it didn't come with the Microsoft Office programs. That you have to buy separately now. But with OpenOffice, which is also available in Windows, by the way, but with all of these programs that are free, and you can work with Google Documents online and so on, you really don't need all of the things that Microsoft has essentially got a monopoly on or had.
Yeah, that's right. In fact, OpenOffice.org is an excellent program. In fact, for
right.
probably 6 months, now it's not true anymore, but for about 6 months, OpenOffice.org was more compatible with Microsoft's older Office versions than Microsoft's new 2007 version was. Yeah, it would read all levels of their documents, but yet if you create a document in 2007 version, which is like a Dixon and XLSX, you know, for Excel,
right,
you could not read those on the older versions. It would say this, it's, you know, it doesn't compute basically,
right.
But you could open those in openoffice.org. And
wow.
There's a lot of programs like that for
right.
Linux. OpenOffice.org is a full Office suite. It's very dependable. It's totally Microsoft compatible. And,
right.
You know, there's all kinds of these programs. I mean, thousands of dollars worth of programs come free on that CD when you get it. And basically,
right.
when you get a Windows operating system, you know, you buy one off of, you know, Dell.com or whatever, you get Windows, and you might get a
right.
trial version of Office on it.
That's
but
right.
with a Linux CD, man, you get everything. You get thousands of programs, thousands of dollars worth of free software, and
right.
It's true freedom.
Yeah, absolutely. Moving away from Linux for a minute, since you are involved in the, you know, high level technology area. What have you heard about the latest greatest new thing that Apple is supposed to come out with? What is it, next week? Are you aware of the tablet?
The tablet. In fact, I've been waiting for this thing ever since I saw Star Trek as a kid. I've wanted a tablet. You know, Captain Kirk, you know, the yeoman
sure.
Rand would come up and hand him that little thing, and he would mark on it with the little funky looking pen, you know, and I think, man, I really want one of those. And I've been waiting my whole life for one of those things. And I thought, man, finally Apple is getting one. And years ago, man, I got to tell you, and I know anybody
yeah.
can say this, but it's really true. At least 10 years ago, when I was running my own consulting business, I kept telling the guys I worked with and anybody else who had listened, basically, said, you know, what I really want is what looks like a laptop screen. Just that,
right.
that I can write on with a stylus, you know, and what we had at the time were those little palm things, you know, the little
sure.
palm pilots. And what
right.
I wanted was like a basically an electronic clipboard. That's really what I wanted. And
sure.
I used to carry a clipboard around with me all the time. People thought I was kind of a dork for doing it, but, you know, it was handy for me. And I wanted
sure.
the electronic version of that. And I want a tablet. Again, I need a benefactor to give me one.
There you go. Yeah, I'm sure they won't be terribly cheap.
Nothing Apple makes is cheap. That's why I don't have
right.
anything that they make.
Yeah, the one thing that I have that Apple makes is an iPod. But that's it.
Yeah. Yeah, the kids, my kids have iPods, but I don't have anything that Apple has made. Too much.
No, I understand. No, yeah, I'm much closer to your age than your kids, I'm sure, and I have an iPod because I go to the gym. Got to have an iPod if you're going to be at the gym, right?
Oh, sure.
Yeah. Now, this tablet, I just read about this today, actually, and they were talking about I really want your take if you've heard anything, that they're trying to get with the publishers of various old types of content, like newspapers, magazines, and books, less so books, but the newspapers and magazines at least, so that people can, and TV shows, so that to this tablet that you wanted, add TV shows and magazines and newspapers, and they're supposed to be able to, like, subscribe to CBS or ABC, and be able to have, you know, a bunch of television shows on the tablet as well. It seems very strange.
Now, I have heard about the books and the newspapers, and that's pretty interesting to me. You can do
yeah.
that with a Kindle now. You can subscribe
sure.
to the New York Times and LA Times and so forth with the Kindle. But I didn't know about the TV shows. But here's the thing. Who the heck has time for that? If you've got that kind
I'm
of
with
time, you know,
yeah.
I don't have time to watch TV on the TV, much less a stupid
right.
iPod or anything else.
No, that's funny. No, I feel the same way. I haven't watched, and not because of, you know, being too smart or snooty or any of that stuff, because I really like television. But like you, I haven't had time to watch regular TV in a very long time. And But, you know, but the only thing I can think of where that would be helpful, if it would work, I mean, if you could download the TV shows, I mean, again, you could do this with an iPod, but the screen isn't big enough. If you download it and then you're going on a plane, while you're on the plane, yeah, you can watch, you know, Desperate Housewives or something, you know. But
sure. In fact, the only TV I get to watch now is I watch Project Runway with my wife. We watch Top Chef. You know, we watch that kind of show, and
right.
It's a couple of hours a week, and that's really, I don't know, that's mostly all I have time for as far as TV, because I do so much, you know, I have a full-time job, and then
right.
I do writing, and I write books and all this other stuff I do, so it's, and of course, the show, so
right.
There's not much time for it.
Yeah, speaking of that, the show has a website called frugaltechshow.com, that's frugal, TECHSHOW.com, right?
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah.
And if someone wants to, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, yeah, we put our, all of the archived content is on there from an RSS feed from Blog Talk Radio. And then we also have the upcoming shows and current show on. You can actually listen from that site. So, yeah, we've been doing that, I think, a week or two ago was our one-year anniversary. So.
Oh, that's great. That's terrific.
Yeah, it's pretty
and,
impressive.
Let's see. I have 5 months in. it sounds like someone's doing a prison sentence. Well, I've been here for 5 months. But
that's right.
No, that is great. A year is terrific. And also, in terms of other ways people can access your information, you mentioned Danny Webb, DANIWEB.com. And what is Cover Your Assets?
Okay, Cover Your Assets. The CYA column I do on serverwatch.com,
uh-huh.
We actually just recently changed that from CYA to Frugal Server Admin. And it's a new take on
trying to clean it up, huh?
Well, yeah, I guess we ran it for an entire year as CYA. I did that a year,
mm-hmm.
starting a year ago, too. And what we're doing is expanding its horizons, I guess. We're making it,
mm-hmm.
Instead of just data center and just large company, now we're focusing on small to medium-sized businesses, and as well as a data center, but it's more server-oriented now instead of just
mm-hmm.
data center, you know, not just huge stuff. I mean, I work for a huge company, and so I'm kind of used to that enterprise feel. But now
right.
we're getting back to basics. You know, we're trying to help out the smaller businesses as well. So it's called
so
Frugal
that,
Server
so with
Admin.
That, go ahead. I'm sorry. Frugal Server. Go ahead.
Frugal Server Admin.
Okay. And what it concentrates on for, again, for those who didn't understand what you were talking about in terms of the large company. For the small and medium business, it would be for basically your data in terms of how to protect that and what to do to make sure you do that, essentially. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's more server-oriented. You know, small and medium-sized mm-hmm. businesses have different problems than enterprises.
Sure.
You know, you're worried about your daily backups. You're worried about your desktop support services. You're worried about, you know, just getting things done. And just like we talked about, you know, the cost of operating
right.
systems, the cost of licensing, you know, that sort
mm-hmm.
of thing. So it's more focused on the, I wouldn't say lower end, but I would say it's more focused on small to medium-sized businesses.
Right. Yeah. Right. It's obviously not for the one-man operation. It's for the situation where there is, in fact, a server and basically a network operator, network system.
Right.
Okay. The other thing I wanted to ask you about, because we were talking before about open source types of systems, and we don't have an enormous amount of time left. This time has gone very quickly, by the way. But the Android, we had a guest on who also does another show on Blog Talk Radio last week, talking about Android. Of course, being used for the phones that it's created by Google. But I had heard that Android was going to start being used as an operating system on netbooks. Are you familiar with that?
Yeah. In fact, Google has two operating systems out right now. One they call Chrome or Chromium, and then Android, that is a small Linux-based operating system that they were doing just phones, like you said, but they're now expanding to probably tablet PCs, netbooks, and so on, because it is so lightweight and so stable that they're going to expand that so that they can, you know, I don't think they're going to make a tremendous amount of money off of it, but it's to some of these netbooks come with like a 4 gig or an 8 gig SD card, basically. You know, mine has a 160 gig hard drive, so I can have a full operating system. But for the people who have the minimum ones, it's an excellent way to have an operating system that's local that you can still access everything you need to.
Because it doesn't take up as much room as something like Windows.
Right, yeah, you could never install Windows on such a small disk.
And essentially, I assume, and don't know, but I assume you know, that it's one of those situations where it's very much like another kind of Linux system that you described earlier. You have Android on as your operating system, then you can use, besides the stuff in the cloud like Google Docs and Google Spreadsheet and Calendar and all of that, you can also just use an OpenOffice.org type of office suite on the netbook with relatively little onboard memory.
Oh, yeah. In fact, I know we're about to run out of time. There's a place called PortableApps.com. And you can actually download and install portable applications to one of these thumb drives, you know, a little flash drive. And no matter how small your laptop or netbook is and how, you know, crunched for room you are, you can install the portable apps on there and you get openoffice.org, you get email, you get all kinds of stuff. Just check it out, portableapps.com.
Yeah.
I run it,
and
it's awesome.
Yeah, your Mozilla Firefox app is right there, and you can do everything. Anyway, I am going to let you go, Ken. Thank you very much, because we are about out of time, and I don't want to have either of us in the middle of a sentence when we get cut off. But thanks very much. And again, you can listen to the show that Ken does with Jason. It's Jason, right? Want to make sure not to miss that. Yes, Jason. At frugaltechshow.com is the easy way to do it. Otherwise, blogtalkradio.com/frugaltech or Frugal Tech Show?
Frugal Tech Show.
Frugal Tech Show. So now you have no excuse for not listening. Ken,
that's
thanks
right.
again. I really enjoyed the time and appreciate your joining us and explaining all that stuff to us.
No problem. Thank you, Jeff.
All right. My pleasure. Take care. Bye-bye.
Okay.
That was Ken Hess, and as said, you can listen to him and his partner in crime at frugaltechshow.com. I want to thank everybody for joining us, I guess me, tonight. And if you're listening in archived version, we are live on Thursday evenings, 6:30 Pacific to 7:30 Pacific. And since we're coming up to 7:30, I wanted to, again, thank our lovely producer, Autumn Bushman, who is lying in her bed in our sumptuous studio, but is with us in conscious spirit. So thank you. We'd be pleased if you joined us next week. We're going to have a guest next week who is going to be talking about books and publishing, having nothing at all to do with technology. Thanks again, and have a good night.